Hello, and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am your host, Cy Kellett, and today we begin by asking, what is the purpose of a Catholic university, most especially probably in a post-Christian world? What must it embrace and what must it resist in this age of moral and intellectual fads? George Weigel once wrote of Anthony Esalen that he wants his students to be virtuous and happy, not just smart and employable. Maybe such a description should belong to a Catholic university as well. Our guest today lives and writes at the very heart of the battle. And if you have to ask what battle, one might ask, have you been paying attention? Anthony Esalen began teaching English at Providence College in 1990 and became a full professor of English in 1995. He is perhaps most renowned for his translation of Dante's Divine Comedy. And again, to go back to George Weigel, he said, and many share this sentiment, that Professor Esalen is a bright jewel in the crown of Catholic higher education. Professor Anthony Esalen, thank you for joining us today on Catholic Answers Focus.
Thank you, Cy. It's a privilege and an honor to be here.
Well, I suppose there's no place else to begin other than you, all those years at Providence College, a full professorship, tenured position, and now you have decided to leave and go to Thomas More College in New Hampshire. And what's that about?
Oh, about many things. I put it to people a few weeks ago in this way, that I could bear being at a more or less Catholic college that was really committed to the arts, the humanities, liberal arts, or at a really solid Catholic school that needed shoring up in the humanities. But to be at a school that was losing its Catholic identity after having survived, not intact, but beaten up and bruised, but yet survived the decades of insanity, okay?
Yes.
When so many other schools had succumbed. And then now, after all of this, you know, just before you put into port to have your hull blown open and to sink like a rock, after all of that, and to have lost its commitment to the liberal arts, that's very discouraging. Not to mention the things that happened to me personally at the college this last year for trying to uphold Catholic teaching.
Right. There were protests against you. There were ad hominem personal attacks against you. I may have missed it, but I didn't notice a great deal of intellectual confrontation with you—that is, a confrontation with the ideas. Have I missed something?
No, you haven't missed anything. Two articles that I wrote for Crisis Magazine last year got me in trouble with the powers that be. In one, I said, "Listen, I don't know. I don't believe that you're really interested in cultural diversity if you are trying to dismantle our Western Civ program, in the freshman year, we introduced students to about 10 or 11, 12 different cultures over the span of 3,000 years, and from parts of continents like Africa and Asia and Europe, with materials written in a good 8 or 9 different original languages. And I mean, come on. You're not really interested in studying a diversity of cultures. What you want to study are yourselves because of your current political concerns. It has nothing to do with culture. It has nothing to do with diversity, right? Well, nobody took up the arguments that I was making, right? I mean, it seems kind of strange to say of somebody, he's not interested in cultural diversity, when the somebody in question reads 10 languages. That seems on the face of it to be a little bit nuts. No, of course not. What we have to understand, okay, is that this is not intellectual at all. This is political, and it touches upon something that is not very easy to talk about in the souls of young people who have been misled. They are hurt personally by any suggestion that they might be wrong about something, in fact, that they might even be kind of silly about something, that this is it's like probing a spot there with it's full of infection, and it hurts. It hurts like hell. And there was no intellectual confrontation.
Well, if that's the diagnosis, you know, that they're in a state where they feel personally affronted by even being told that they're wrong about things, then what's the etiology of it? What do you have any sense of what is the root of this? What's caused this?
Yeah, I do, unfortunately. Now, the thing is that teachers, and that includes college professors, they have fostered this. And this hurts the young people because it makes them, in important ways, and anything that would touch them at all in a personal way that has to do, in a broad sense, with human life, it makes them very difficult to educate, if not ineducable. And it's not because of their brains. It's because of what they've been taught to accept about themselves. That is, they've been taught a very poisonous thing, that they are the victims of many centuries of vicious abuse, and that fact gives them a kind of moral credibility. It elevates them to a status at which they are beyond or above criticism. Their feelings count for everything. They must not be made to feel foolish. Okay. Now, this is the reverse of what you need. Maybe sometimes I think it's useful to think of what you would do if you were a coach, right? You have a coach, you've got a kid who has talent, but who it takes himself very seriously and will not listen to anything that the manager or one of the other coaches says. Well, you're dealing with somebody who needs to be. He needs to be told that he's behaving like a fool, okay?
Yes.
And if he's not capable of being told that, then he'll never really succeed. He'll quickly reach the end of his talents, you know. And it's not good for that person to have everybody else around him walking on eggshells. I recall in this vein, one of my old friends at Providence College passed away about 25 years ago. When he was a young professor, he's a Dominican priest. A kid came to him. This was when it was an all male school, so maybe this sort of thing is easier to imagine when you're dealing with a man and a young man. A kid came to him with all sorts of sob stories about what his life was like and why he couldn't get his paper in on time and so on. And the Dominican priest looked at him and said, "Kid, my piles bleed for you." And that's a little bit that's a little bit raw. It's also a little bit humorous, and it sees right through the posturing. You know, I mean, most of the time, when we, human beings are like this, right? Most of the time when we say, "No, I couldn't possibly do this, I couldn't possibly do that," a lot of it is just, you know, I didn't get around to doing it. I'm actually not being entirely honest about my feelings. Somebody in my family died and I had to go to the funeral, but I didn't like him anyway. So now I wasn't really cut up about it, you know? Human beings are human beings.
But what as you give that description, because we all do need that at a certain point in our life. We need somebody to crack the shell a little bit or to say.
Right.
But what it seems to me that what you're also describing is a community at the university level now. And I'm not just talking about Providence College, but it would seem this is epidemic that is shouting down the person who will do the very thing that the students need done.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The principle of deterrence is in place now at Providence College. Nobody from this year on will dare to tell certain groups of kids, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, they may total three quarters of the students on campus if you include women, who in certain circumstances fall into this category. You must not tell them certain things. That it doesn't do anybody any good. Everybody's going to be on tiptoe. Nobody's going to dare to say, listen, kid, you're behaving like a fool here. Come on, get off it. We got some important stuff to do. You know, put down your poster. Put down your poster. Welcome to the human race, okay? History is full of human beings who did wonderful and noble things and human beings who did rotten things, just as you yourself by now have done some rotten things. So let's get down off our political high horse and let's get to some serious studying, okay? Nobody's going to say that. Nobody's going to say that. It's impossible. It's been rendered impossible now.
So in one of your pieces that you mentioned, the two pieces in Crisis Magazine, one of them you used in the – I don't know if you – as a matter of fact, I think I do know. You did not choose the title.
No, I didn't choose the title.
But do you think that there is – I mean, I remember Cardinal Ratzinger almost before he became Pope Benedict giving us the idea of the dictatorship of relativism.
Right.
And then you the title that was put on there included the phrase totalitarian diversity cult. Does that strike you? I mean, is it a kind of dictatorship, a totalitarianism that we're facing?
Yes, it is. Now I didn't choose that title because I don't actually enjoy offending people. I had no intention to offend. I had the intention to correct and to warn people in charge of Providence College that they're going down a very dangerous and destructive direction. However, if you want to show somebody, okay, that you are not totalitarian at heart, I would not recommend immediately going to the president and demanding that the person who called you out for your incoherence, your inconsistencies, your foolishness, that person be fired. Okay, I mean the immediate behavior of the professors and the students that they are, I believe, are misleading, showed that the editor was justified in putting that title on the piece,
right,
even though I didn't want the title. I didn't write it. But it's there. And all we have to do is look at other campuses across the country, and we see, you know. I mean, what is it? What do you call it if you are warned, as in fact I was warned, back in December, if you give a certain lecture on campus, the students will shut it down. What the heck is that?
Right.
It's horrible, right?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the lecture that I gave. I gave it actually a couple months later at church across the street. It was a lecture called Christ and the Meaning of Cultural Diversity. And I lay out exactly what I believe culture is and why diversity of cultures is a good and healthy thing, and what that has to do with Christ and his church, right? That talk could not be given at Providence College because word was gotten to me through the administration that the students would shut it down. Now, at that point, okay, you cease, to the extent that this can happen, you cease to be an educational institution. Higher education then becomes a swindle,
yeah,
a swindle for political purposes.
As the translator of Dante, you've had a lot of experience with the with a culture that took the demonic very seriously, and I wonder if you have a sense of that. There is something, and one hesitates because to say it, but there, it does seem that what the demons would most like is for minds to be closed to those things that give glory to God, to those things that can raise the human being up. Do you have any sense as a scholar of literature that's really rooted in a world full of demons and angels that such things are present in this?
Yeah, I do. I think all of European literature until the relatively recent modern age, I mean, maybe the early 1900s, but even much of European literature after that, is rooted in a world where people do believe in divine and demonic forces, okay? Dickens certainly did. Whether he believed in the actual existence of devils, hell, I don't know, but certainly diabolical forces at work in human societies. The thing is, if you have a strong sense of the persistent foolishness of human nature, and the fact that we never really get everything right, we never come close to getting everything right, that all of us are sinners and we're all very much in need of the grace of God, well then you would be kind of slow to give your reverence to some political movement or even to a political system that happens to be a pretty decent one, like the American political system, as it used to be anyhow. You know, because you're too aware of the frailty of human nature and the foolishness, okay? That will prompt you to take yourself a little bit lightly. And as Chesterton says, that's something where angels can fly because they take themselves lightly. However, if instead what you have, okay, is what you've been instructed since you were a little kid in the dread seriousness of the evils that have been visited upon you personally through your ancestors over the course of centuries, and that therefore gives you a kind of moral cachet so that you can pronounce upon the goodness and badness of others, and your outrage counts for something, has to count, then we're talking about something very bad indeed, something that's not even particularly human. If you get infected with that, then all bets are off. I mean, there are people at Providence College who I think are very silly people. I don't think they're particularly well-educated. They teach in various departments that I don't think highly of, you know. However, I would never do to them what they did to me this year, in part because, you know, I mean, they got families, they have wives and kids and all that. I don't want to turn their lives upside down. But also, heck, I retain, I think, a healthy sense that I don't know everything in the world. If they retained that healthy sense, then they might shrug and say, well, you know, I don't know about this fella Esalen, but heck, I don't know everything in the world. But you see, if you've been taught instead that you do, in this one regard, know everything in the world, right? Then forget it. Then it's like you have carte blanche to do to anybody what you feel like doing. I think that's demonic.
I wonder how, in your view, how much this kind of intellectual darkening, because it has a kind of self-righteousness attached to it and a inflation of self, how much it's connected with sexual revolution and what we've decided to believe about ourselves and our sexuality.
Oh my gosh, I think it has everything to do with it. One of the reasons why this is a paradox, right? You have all the more energetically to promote and defend the world we live in now, precisely to the extent that the world we live in now is a basket case. I mean, look, the facts stare everybody in the face. Nobody's getting married. Even among those who do get married, half of them get divorced, okay? 40% of children in America born out of wedlock, all right? I mean, it's a complete societal collapse when it comes to marriage, family, and the rearing of children. It's a complete collapse. If you are part of that in any way, that is, if you have accepted the sexual revolution, if you are behaving according to its hedonistic norms, then you right now are in the midst of something that is completely indefensible, okay? I mean, in the 60s, you could at least say, hey, why don't we try this, you know? You can't say that anymore. It's ugly, it's brutal, it has caused immense human misery. Therefore, you have to be all the more deliberately darkened in order to defend it. It's like after a couple of decades of Soviet communism, right? After Stalin has starved the peasants in the Ukraine to hold to communism, that requires a tremendous amount of diabolical energy. I think it is a big part of the darkening of colleges around the country. If you took sex out of the equation, okay, much of what we're talking about vanishes.
It's interesting that the analogy you use is to Soviet communism, which is really a kind of alternate church. It's an alternate secularized church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this an alternate church too, or is this a kind of postmodern alternative?
Yes, it is. Yeah, we should never use the word ideology to refer to a set of ideas. In fact, many ideologies don't have any ideas to them. An ideology is a kind of substitute religion, where you give to an idea, or as I've said recently, more likely a slogan or an appetite, you give to that the reverence that you owe to God and the love that you owe to reality around you. The ideology blinds you to what is real and normal and ordinary and human. It very quickly shows itself to be disastrous. So you would think, well, most people, if they have any sense, anything left of reason, would say, hey, you know, I mean, this didn't actually work out. But no, see, people commit themselves doggedly to the ideology, and its failure makes them more persistent in it, not less. It's a pretty vicious thing. But I will be leaving that.
Yeah.
So I will be leaving it.
So you see light, I assume, at Thomas More College in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with, there is a Thomas More College in Kentucky, I believe.
Right.
But Thomas More College in New Hampshire, what is it modeling there? What have you found there that has attracted you?
Well, oh my gosh, everything. And can I say it at the outset that the first people to contact me when it became public that I was being attacked and slandered, okay? And let me make that absolutely clear that I was the object of slander twice from the administration of my college. The first people to get in touch with me were people at Thomas More College. Other people since have gotten in touch with me. I've gotten offers to teach at several places, but this, I think, would be the best for me and my family. They are a small college in New Hampshire devoted to the Catholic faith and the sanity of the Catholic and Christian vision of the world, and to reality, to the good things in reality, to what is true and good and beautiful, okay? So they do all kinds of wonderful things there that should be done at every Catholic college in the country, but they aren't done. So they have concerts and plays and dances, and I don't mean one a year either. I mean that getting together to do human things that are innocent and wholesome is a regular feature of their lives. It happens all the time. Okay. For instance, to give you another example of this, they have mass at 11:30 in the morning every day during the week, and at that hour, this is also true of Christendom College in Virginia. But at that hour, there are no classes scheduled, so you can go to mass, and everybody can go to mass. Even the professors and administrators go to mass. Well, there you are in a small chapel with students together, kneeling in prayer, okay? And then afterwards, because the time is still free, you go in the same building to have lunch, and you eat. You sit down to eat with people that you teach with, or the kids that you are teaching, or the professor's spouses, their little kids. It's a human enterprise in every sense of the word. I met kids who were happy, who are not violating the moral laws regarding sex. I don't think that at Thomas More College they say to freshmen at freshman orientation, hey, you know, if you're fornicating in your room, you might want to put a sock on the doorknob just to let your roommate know to stay out. That apparently was the case a few years ago. This is testimony from a mother of a student at Providence College. I mean, come on. No, they don't do that. I taught a class there late in the afternoon that was supposed to go for an hour. It went on for an hour and 20 minutes, and suddenly I realized I had no track of time at all. And I said to the students, have we gone over time? And they began to laugh. They would have gone on for another hour. They were just having fun. They're there to learn. I was teaching them poetry, teaching them Latin poetry. They loved it. I think that to be there is to be with sane people. I'll have to wait till heaven to be around saints, and I hope I get to be around saints. But just to be around people who are not out of their minds is refreshing. And to be around kids who have not been rendered sullen and half guilty and surly and embarrassed by the things that they've been doing for 5, 6, 7 years, the bad things that they've been doing, you know.
Yep.
I mean, you can tell. It wears down the human spirit. These kids were fresh-faced and innocent.
And that it sounds like that image of 11:30 Mass, where you're at Mass with voluntarily at Mass, yep, with professors, with administrators, with staff, I would assume, with students.
Yep.
It sounds like a community of learning centered on Christ.
Yes, yes. See, one of the things that they understand at Thomas More College, and I have been trying to get this word out to my Catholic friends and other Christian friends too, they understand that all the truly human things are our friends, our allies. It needn't be specifically ecclesiastical. The human things are our allies. So eating together, that's a human thing. That's friendly to us. Enjoying good poetry, okay, even if the poetry is not specifically religious. Is something that evangelical Christians have not understood. That's friendly to us, okay? Being outdoors, actually, for doing some of your science classes and focusing on the beautiful world of nature right there instead of cutting up dead rats in a laboratory, as worthy as that might be, that's our friend, too. Getting together in formal games of frisbee or football, that's our friend. Dances, learning to sing, learning to play musical instrument, singing old folk songs and ballads, singing love songs. Those are our friends, okay? We're going to try, Thomas More College, to restore a Catholic culture in part, not in toto, but in part, by restoring a genuinely human culture. And that's the genius behind President William Fahey's idea to have an institute for the restoration of Catholic culture. It would be really an institute for cultural renewal, and we're going to get that going.
And so
we need support.
Okay, so and your role there will be what?
My role will be to teach, just like everybody else teaches. I'll be teaching the same load of courses that I teach now at Providence College, and to be a writer in residence, and they want me basically to do my writing, the same that I do now here, to do it there, okay? And also to be a kind of a flashpoint for what we want to get started there. We have the building for it, and we have the ideas, this Center for the Restoration of Catholic Culture. So to be a flashpoint for lectures and exhibits by by groups in the community. They've already had, for instance, the New Hampshire Orchid Society have an exhibit in their building. Anything that is really innocent, that piques the human mind, that is oriented in all in any way towards what is good and true and beautiful, all of that is friendly to us, and we want to encourage that. I would like to see regular concerts put on there, lecture series on how to play folk music, how to write poetry in the old style, lectures on sacred art, lectures on architecture, anything and everything. Okay. However, I'm going to tell your listeners that this is a small college, and unlike the college that shall now remain nameless, where I have been teaching, they can't raise $170 million in 1 year by trading upon a Catholicism that in some way no longer is true of the school. So they very much need people's support, and they're very much worthy of it, too.
Do you have any sense that with the, you know, you just talk about the size and the amount of money that can be raised and all that, that some of the large institutions of the Catholic Church, particularly higher education institutions, that, well, two things. One, is there any hope that small, communities might form within those institutions that can help in the reform of those institutions? And I don't mean to indict all of them. I don't know all of them, in those that have lost their way.
Right.
The other question, part of that question is, do you think that these smaller institutions like St. Thomas More College in New Hampshire have a role to play in kind of evangelizing the larger institutions or re-evangelizing them?
Yeah, yes. An emphatic yes to both questions. And the first question, can you kind of implant in a formerly Catholic college that is now Catholic only nominally, can you implant a Catholic community there and have it slowly transform the college? I think the answer to that question is yes. However, the difficulty is not to be underestimated. And you can have situations such as seems to be brewing at St. Thomas College in St. Paul, Minnesota, where you had a wonderfully vibrant and popular Catholic studies program that is being undermined and slowly destroyed by the current president of the college. Okay, or you have the University of Dallas, where the trustees don't seem to understand just what role the humanities have to play in Dallas as being a Catholic college, and are undermining that. There's going to be problems. There's going to be problems. But I have seen it happen at a couple of places. And I have seen it happen with a college that had lost most of its Catholicism is turned over by a very aggressive administration. That happened at Benedictine College in Kansas and at St. Francis de Sales College in Pennsylvania. And they're both very fine places. So it can happen, but a place like Thomas More is not just a place where you know you're trying to the patient has typhus and pneumonia, and you're trying to pick one to cure. You know, a place like Thomas More is like maybe what the first Cistercian monasteries were back when the Benedictines needed to be reformed. They had gotten too successful and too rich, and they forgot their mission. And so an offshoot of the Benedictines, very poor, sort of rebels, formed, and they became the great leaders of the church for a good century and a half in the 1100s, right?
Yes.
That happens in the history of the church, happens pretty frequently. And I think that places like Thomas More College will provide far more than their share of leaders in the church and educational leaders in the next several generations. If you want bang for your buck, if that's what you think of, I'd look there, and not have, 60% of your dollars siphoned off for administrative costs, and then who knows what happens with the rest? Come on.
Well, if I may ask, because I'm coming near the end of my opportunity to speak with you, and it's been wonderful to talk with you about this. I want to get maybe back up for a big picture question for you to end, and that has to do with your kind of multifaceted position that you're in the world of academia and within the church. You seem to have two big agendas: one, to restore culture, and the other, to restore the Christian ethos, a true Christianity, right. An innocent kind of Christianity.
Right.
So I'm going to give you a very big open-ended question, an opportunity to kind of give us some guidance for the future. Christ and culture. What does Christ mean to culture? I mean, Dante and Shakespeare and all of that has been built up, and how, and I know this is a very large question, but you're Anthony Esselin, I'll ask it. How do we restore Christ to the center of culture so that work can begin again of making a truly human culture?
There's lots to be done, and that's why I've written my latest books, I think one thing we need to understand is that the culture itself is being threatened as never before. What we have right now may not qualify as a culture at all, but just sort of the after effects of mass education and mass entertainment and mass politics. We need to recover a full sense of what it means to be cultural beings. Okay. And I'm not talking about high culture necessarily. I'd be talking about middle culture or folk culture. I'm not necessarily making everybody go to the opera, okay? Although the opera was popular culture in Italy back in the day. I think we need to remember that it is natural for human beings to dwell in cultures. What's not natural may be what we have now. And if we take Thomas Aquinas' saying seriously, that grace perfects nature, that suggests to us that what's natural for human beings better not be neglected, okay? Because then grace will have insufficient material there to work upon. You want a full human nature. Yes, I know that human nature is also fallen, but Catholics do not believe that human nature is utterly fallen and utterly depraved. All the things that are natural for human beings to do, natural in their God-ordained nature as human creatures rather than dogs or cats, all those things, again, are helpful to us, and they're good in themselves. We need to work at restoring those. Okay, because we want fully realized human beings for Christ to evangelize. We got to restore the family, and the family is not just a group of people who happen to share the same flop house. The family is the fundamental unit of society. We want it in our young people to be the thing on this earth, other than divine things, the thing on this earth that is most important. We ought to be raising young men and young women with the clear and eager expectation that they will marry, and not when they're 40 either, that they will marry relatively soon in their youth, to get about the real business of human life on this earth, which is to live with people that you love, and then to extend that love into the neighborhood and the farther community. We need to get all those things in order. And a guy like me can point people towards the cultural things that we've lost, while at the same time reminding everybody that these cultural things, as good as they are ultimately also nothing. unless they are oriented towards towards the worship of God and our lives with God in heaven. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I hope it makes sense.
It makes sense to me.
Okay.
It sure did. When do you get started up at Thomas More College in New Hampshire?
Boy, oh boy, I get started in September, and, trying to move at my age, trying to move is not easy.
No, it never is. Well, maybe we could check back in with you sometime and see how things are going in that transition. Would that be all right?
Absolutely, and then I'll tell stories about the college. Then everybody will know just what I'm talking about there.
Okay, and I did neglect to mention, and you were with all that talk of culture we just did, Out of the Ashes, Rebuilding American Culture is the latest book from Professor Anthony Esselin, so look out for that. Out of the Ashes.
Actually, not the latest.
Oh, it's not.
Late enough.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to fill me in off air. Let me just say the title again. Out of the Ashes, Rebuilding American Culture. Professor Anthony Esselin, thanks so much for joining us today on Catholic Answers Focus.
Thank you, Si. I had a blast. Thanks.
And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll see you again next week on Catholic Answers Focus.